right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, Grace, and Brent with you guys today. So, guys, before we get to the depressing stories of today,
so many.
Yes, there's literally so many we couldn't keep up. Tambor and Rose didn't make the cut, but it's amazing. All right, let me read some tweets for you guys. Sean Ferris says, Jesus, who even pretends to think they're not buying the votes at this point? The American government is for sale for the highest bidder, and spoiler alert, it ain't people who won the bidding war. No. The reason that the working poor and the middle class are going to get tax increases is because you guys don't have lobbyists. Okay. Matthew Reed says, Republicans use language that confuses people. They don't ever tell you that tax raise always puts more money in the pockets of the rich. In fact, this next tax plan, the one that already passed the House, 80% of the money goes to the top 1%. 80%. No, they're not going to admit that. The nonpartisan groups that looked into it will tell you that that's the case, but the Republicans don't want you to know that. But apparently you found out because it's polling really, really badly. All right, member shoutouts are Adam Vargas and Shannon Bale. Thank you guys. You guys allow us to be independent media. We appreciate it. And we got a post game for you guys today. Later in the week, we have Old School. We had a great episode of Old School last week with me, Ben, Steve, and Mark Thompson. Please check that out if you remember. I had an interview with Reza Aslan, which I thought was really interesting this morning. Members get to see the interviews live, and you'll also have it up for you, of course, later. So, tytnetwork.com/join to become a member. All right, Grace, what's next?
All right, we have a pretty heavy second hour, but I will guide you through it. So let's just start off with a new report from the Los Angeles Times. On Sunday, the Los Angeles Times published a comprehensive report that details new allegations of sexual misconduct and abuse by Russell Simmons and Brett Ratner. Now, the report is about 13 pages in length. It's very long, but I'm going to walk you through it. It centers around the accusations of a model, Carrie Clausen Kaligi, who is 17 years old at the time. She tells her story about how she went back to the apartment of the Def Jam recording mogul Russell Simmons to take a look at what he and Brett said was a music video. Then she says, quickly, Simmons began making aggressive sexual advances, yanking off her clothes, Kaligi said. I looked over at Brett and said, help me, and I'll never forget the look on his face, she recalled. In that moment, the realization fell on me that they were in it together. Now, for his part, Russell Simmons has vehemently denied these allegations. He has cited all the work that he's put in for women's advocacy and his involvement in the hashtag MeToo campaign. He also released a statement which said, in part, in a statement, Simmons 60 strongly disputed her account. Everything that occurred between Carrie and me occurred with her full consent and participation, he said. Much of the 2 days and one night he spent with her, he said, was with other people or in public. Ratner had no recollection of Kaligi asking him for help and denied witnessing her protest, his attorney Martin Singer said. Now, this comes on the heels of many women coming forward and speaking about their own allegations of abuse by Brett Ratner. And what the Los Angeles Times report breaks down is how they see that Ratner was surrounding himself with other powerful Hollywood players that were complicit in his abuse and sometimes even participating. They say, in several of the accounts, the women said that Ratner, 48, surrounded himself with powerful friends, including Simmons and filmmaker James Tobik, who, while sharing Ratner's Playboy lifestyle, have also been accused of engaging in sexual misconduct. Those friendships, some women said, enabled inappropriate behavior within the group, sometimes by active participation and in other cases by simply providing venues for incidences to take place. There's a number of things that come up. They have a whole bunch of different women that speak on the record about their own experiences with these men. Some of this stuff is just coming out from their own words. So, for example, in 2007, in Russell Simmons' book, he talks about his relationship with Brett Ratner, saying, in part, after he hung around a bit and figured out that I liked models, then he made it his business to take me to every model's apartment he could find. Then there's also a 2005 Playboy article where Simmons left the table where he was talking with the interviewer, and then it came to light that when he left the table for about an hour, it was to engage in sex with a model who Ratner had just had sex with. So there are all these stories that the Los Angeles Times breaks down, a number of women speaking on the record. And then just to walk you through it again before I get a response from you all, Simmons' attorney has said Simmons' attorney has provided a signed statement from Simmons' former assistant Anthony Mack McNair, who said he saw Kalighi go to Simmons' bedroom on her own volition without any coercion or undue influence. McNair said the group also went out to a nightclub later that evening. McNair said he saw Kalighi at Simmons' house the next day, an assertion affirmed by Simmons, and did not notice any visible signs of distress or anything improper that had occurred. Now, Kalighi retorts saying that she did not see anyone but Simmons or Ratner at Simmons' home and did not recall being there the next day. The Times could not reach McNair for comment. She also, after the Times published the story about Ratner, she reached out to him and told him that she was going to publicly tell her story, that she was considering that. She urged him to disclose his past behavior. He called her. She said, and they spoke for 27 minutes, according to phone records reviewed by the Times. Simmons said he did not deny any of the claims. Instead, he apologized, mentioning that he is now a father of two daughters. That is sort of the spark notes of what is detailed in this Los Angeles Times account. You guys read it through. What was your response?
So let's separate out the issues. So there's Brett Ratner, who there is a lot of credible allegations against, including in the last set of stories and this set of stories. This story is ostensibly about Russell Simmons, at least that's the headlines. But when you read it, there's far more cases about Brett Ratner. And so those allegations look incredibly credible, okay? So Ratner is and should be in a world of trouble. Now, Russell Simmons and Ratner hung out together. That by itself doesn't prove anything, okay? On the other hand, the allegations by Kalighi are disturbing, to say the least. And look, I should, whenever there's any kind of bias or conflict of interest, I try to be transparent about it. I know Russell Simmons a tiny bit. He's been on the show a couple of times. I've been on panels with him. I like him. I don't know anything about this, right? And as what happened with Cosby, I liked his work. And Russell Simmons did Run DMC and Beastie Boys and Public Enemy, and that's three out of the top, five favorite things that I grew up to. And so it's, I'm telling you that in an effort to get past it, okay? So the assistant saying she came back later. Well, that actually happens a lot. It does, you know, it is logical for people to think, oh, well, that must mean that she liked him. No, not necessarily the case at all. That's part of the power dynamic here is that a lot of women and sometimes men feel that that if they don't do as they're told, their careers are going to be absolutely ruined. So yes, sometimes they show up the next day. And in this case, we don't even know if she showed up the next day. That's just what the assistant is saying. And in the case of Ratner, there's another story in this long LA Times story about a woman who then after Ratner brushed up against her and made inappropriate comments and physical actions, she wrote him a nice note. But Anita Hill wrote a nice note to Clarence Thomas. Many women write nice notes later because they're afraid that they're going to lose their careers. And also, it's not just that. It's that they feel like, oh, am I doing the wrong thing by challenging them? And is everybody going to say that I'm a poor sport? Or a thousand different pressures here. So if the allegations are true in the case of Kalighi, and right now, unlike Ratner, this appears to be the sole claim against Russell Simmons. You know, as with these stories, you never know if that's how it's going to wind up. But if they're true, they're devastating. So,
Brett, let's get your input.
I watched the news lately, similar to the way I watched The Walking Dead, just to see which one of my heroes will turn out to be like a soulless, blood-sucking creep. Like, you know, like in Walking Dead, they turn into zombies. In the news, my heroes turn out to be sexual predators. And it's so devastating, and I totally get it. I think an important part is for people who look up to certain folks, as you can't not. There's going to be people you look up to. For me, it's Al Franken and Louis C.K. And then you hear these stories, you read these stories, and you think to yourself, it's okay to have that first reaction of, it's unavoidable. To have that first reaction of, I love that person. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I watched every episode of The Cosby Show. Mm-hmm. That was like my TV dad. But you have to kind of compartmentalize it, as you hear that a lot of victims have to compartmentalize the feelings they have surrounding an event like this, and try to figure out what actually happened. I think something important with the Kaligian one, or whatever, I don't know how,
Kaligi,
is this part. Did you read the part about the lawyer, what the lawyers have said afterwards? You know, there's this part in the article where the expose or whatever you want to call it, where there's this moment where years later, Russell Simmons approaches Kaligi and they embrace, they talk about the incident, and they don't give specifics about what was apologized for, but there was some kind of apology and there was like a hug, one said. But then, and it seems like they're working towards some kind of solution between the two of them, but then the lawyers come in with a statement. Mm-hmm. And the statement is things like, now, however, I guess maybe it's Ratner. There's one where Ratner, and there's another one with Simmons' lawyer, where it's like, they never heard any alleged, or they basically say that there was never, I don't know, they kind of equivocate and say, this is not an admission of guilt. And that's what's frustrating, is that the lawyers have been able to identify exactly the power structures in place that keep certain bits of evidence from coming into any potential legal case. And you hear all these guys say, well, I've grown a lot as a person, and I was in a really tough place back then. But they never really want to take full responsibility, mm-hmm. and they definitely don't want to suffer any kind of legal consequence. And so they want this, like, hug at the whatever it is, Soho House, to mean something, but the lawyers step in and are like, but it can't be any like legal consequence that they suffer. That's something that's frustrating for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you can understand why. If it is true and he admits it, there probably are legal consequences. And so his lawyer is going to tackle him and say, don't do that. I'm not saying that that's right, I'm just telling you what a lawyer is going to do. And look, it's just, these are all super hard because, you know, they say, we believe the woman is now a saying, right? And I want you to understand what that means. It's a little bit like Black Lives Matter. It doesn't mean that no other lives matter, right? It means Black Lives Matter as well. And we believe the women doesn't mean that every woman is always telling the truth in every case. It means, generally speaking, we're now at a state in our society where all those charges that we didn't believe, we brushed under the rug and didn't give credit to, it turns out they were largely right. Okay, it doesn't mean that you believe every single woman. Of course, there's a case in Virginia that Rolling Stone got in so much trouble for, where a woman had made up allegations and they investigated and it turned out it wasn't true. And we have a criminal justice system where we don't just believe people, we go through a process. But the phrase does mean something, which is, in the past they were largely not believed. And in reality, about 2% of cases statistically are not true. 98% are true. And
what we're talking about is empowering people who have been powerless, whose voices did not matter for so long. And now, because of what has swayed in the wake of the Harvey Weinstein piece, now these women are feeling emboldened to come forward. Or I don't even want to say these women, these people are coming forward, because just later we're going to be talking about Terry Crews. But for years there was this, in Hollywood and in other industries as well, as we will also discuss, there was this insane power dynamic where these people at the top just wielded such influence that people felt powerless to come forward, or they felt powerless to voice how they truly felt a situation went down. And that is crystal clear in this Los Angeles Times piece, because they also talk with the actress Sarah Shahi, who talks about her experience with Brett Ratner that she felt was inappropriate, but that she also felt like she had to keep up a good relationship with him because of his power in Hollywood. And then, you know, Brett and I were talking before we went to tape about, how do you reconcile that? Like, should she have called him out earlier? Or, you know, what?
But that's what we believe the woman means, because back then it was really, really, really hard to come out because mm-hmm. people wouldn't believe you. And back then was like 2 months ago. So yeah. Now you're getting an avalanche of these stories because there's almost like a sense of relief, from women who have held this back for so long, finally going, oh, I can say it and somebody will believe me.
And she says, I was trying to be a smart businesswoman, this is Sarah Shahi, by keeping the lines of communication open, I played the Hollywood game like every other actress. And then Ratner's attorney, you know, vehemently denies this, saying that, you know, she was very flirty, these overwhelming contradictions make the claims inherently improbable, is you know, what he says to her part. But I think that what we hear from these actresses, especially that are coming forward, is like, this was the territory. This is what you had to do to get work.
Right, it's like all these wide-eyed models who, you know, were, when they were 17, they came to Los Angeles and they had these dreams of making it as a model or an actress. Like, in my opinion, from what I've read, and this is just my speculation, Brett Ratner wasn't dreaming of coming, you know, to Hollywood just to be the director. He was dreaming about having these interactions, getting to a point where he had like the jet and the fancy house where he'd get women into his place and he was going to design it here and there'd be a jacuzzi there and he'd have all these women over. And since he became Brett Ratner, he was going to have this. Mm-hmm. Another weird part of it is like now I'm reading into like his father issues that he had and all of this.
And the role that Russell Simmons played in that dynamic.
Russell Simmons, you had various other, like hanging out with Roman Polanski was like a father figure of his, and you know the stories behind that. And there was another prominent executive that ran Paramount. Yeah. And I get it. And there's all these things happening, but it really frustrates me when I see things like, you know, Russell Simmons saying he has found peace now. It's like, well, that's the most selfish approach. I'm glad you've found peace. But like, think about all the stuff you've put maybe not him, but like generally the entire dynamic is, this has created a very weird place for people to have to handle the lay of the land. And you find yourself saying, well, I find myself saying, the most pure-souled person is the one who sees this injustice and says, no, I have to stop it immediately. That's a really tough place to put someone in. And then I find myself saying someone who waited until a moment when they had a little power, even though they benefited. Like for me, it's Tig Notaro. Like Tig Notaro is the one who made this Louis C.K. thing kind of happen, one of the very few. But she wouldn't have been able to make the difference unless she had gotten Louis C.K. to produce some of her stuff. And so she benefited, I guess, in a certain way. But then she becomes the one who is now big enough to say something that gets more people to do the research. Combined with the Gawker article, finally the New York Times says it. So she didn't speak out. I mean, I guess people like her haven't all spoken out immediately. But when they do get some power, I just don't know where to draw the line. And I find like we all need a PhD in ethics math at the end of this because we have so many data points on what kind of perv you can be in America.
Well, but look, nuance matters. And so that's why I'm trying to constantly give context. So last piece of context here. For Ratner, if he wanted to have the Hollywood lifestyle and have the jacuzzi and the girls, he shares that with almost every guy in the country. That's totally different than the descriptions that many of these women give, including Jamie Ong, who says she was 21, she's at his mansion in Hollywood. And then he corners her in a room, won't let her leave. It starts groping at her, and then takes out his, you know, penis and does what he has apparently done with Olivia Munn, etc. And he tries to get her to touch it, she won't. And finally, he masturbates. So this is something that many women have accused Ratner of. That is, I hope not in the dreams of the young kids who are trying to get the jacuzzi in Hollywood.
But right? I think it's the same. It's just. He had this dream, and I think that dream is inherently sexist, like the dream that I will have money and power which will translate to women in bikinis under Hef's waterfall. Like that is inherently sexist because it implies that women are attracted to money and power, and that's just not, I don't think that's a nice thing to do. Whether it's true or not, I'm sure there are women who are attracted to that, and I'm sure he had success with certain women, and then he comes along women who had like a good relationship with their father or whatever, and they finally say no. But I don't know, I feel like Brett Ratner didn't start off with the first woman when he got his first director's gig and had him up to his hotel room and whipped out his junk, and when she said no, started masturbating in front of her. I think he, over time, honed this like sick trap that he lured a lot of people into, and he got better at it and more confident in it, and he became more Brett Ratner than he was before, and he got to a point, but it started with that, first you get the money, then you get the power, you know.
Yeah.
And the last thing on Russell Simmons is that what Grace read to you was from Touré, who had interviewed him back in 1994, not about the Caligi thing, but about how Brett Ratner apparently was done with a girl, and Russell Simmons went up and also had some sort of relationship with her. No one is alleging that that was not consensual. So, you know, if it was consensual, that's their business. And I don't want to get into the business of overly judging people's sex lives, because we're not those people. We're not the, you know, the evangelical pastors and hypocrites, etc., getting into people's sex lives and telling them what to do and what not to do. We only care about stuff that is non-consensual or creates, you know, a work environment where there's sexual harassment and it's hostile, etc. So far, the only charge against Russell Simmons is the one from Kalighi, and sometimes there could be a misinterpretation. She thought it wasn't consensual, he thought it was. I don't know if that's what they're going to claim. But to be clear, she says she fought it wildly, so that there should not have been any mistake as to what went down. And so eventually she says she acquiesced to oral sex because she felt like she had no choice in getting out of that situation. So I want to be as clear as we can on the facts presented.
Yeah, it's pretty unsettling stuff. And we're actually going to be staying with Russell Simmons for this next story. Deals with Terry Crews as well. So after Terry Crews slams Russell Simmons on Twitter, after Russell Simmons sends him an email asking him to sort of take it easy on the agent Adam Bennett, who Terry Crews has accused of groping him at a party. So in the email that he posted to his Twitter, it's from Russell Simmons with just the subject line, agent, reading, did he ever apologize? Give the agent a pass, ask that he be reinstated with great love, all things are possible. Terry Crews then tweeted, message Russell Simmons sent me regarding my sexual assault case against Adam Bennett of WME. Dear at Uncle Rush, no one gets a pass, in all caps. And what I think is interesting, I found this quote with regards to the emotional intelligence that Terry Crews displayed, saying, quote, the email Simmons purportedly sent Crews is more evidence of the dark side. By asking Crews to, quote, give the agent a pass, it sends the message that a weak apology is sufficient to alleviate any severe emotional pain and suffering experienced by the victim. It also implies that excusing this type of behavior is somehow taking the high road, but that couldn't be further from the truth. That message has since become complicated by new and disturbing allegations against Simmons himself, which you can check out our discussion of that in another TYT video. Now, just to give you guys up-to-date context on what's going on, Variety reported on November 3rd that Mr. Bennett was on leave as the agency looked into the actor's accusations, but Mr. Crews had not publicly identified Mr. Bennett until Wednesday. Mr. Crews, who had been represented by WME but not by Mr. Bennett, personally left the agency last week. Mr. Bennett represented some of Hollywood's most well-known actors, including Emma Stone, Adam Sandler, Sylvester Stallone, Michael B. Jordan, Dustin Hoffman, and Eddie Murphy. So what was your reaction when you saw Terry Crews taking this email, private email correspondence to Twitter? I personally thought this was incredibly bold and awesome for calling him out. No one gets a pass.
Yeah, I'm not sure I thought it was awesome. And I'll tell you a couple of distinctions here. So first off, of course, it shouldn't matter between male and female victims. But I think what it is that there's little different standards between not male or female, but thick skin versus thin skin. And I'm not saying that to disparage people who have thin skin. I'm just saying that people have different reactions. You know, as I was reading this story, because the guy grabbed him from the front, okay? We've covered stories in the past here where a couple of guys here have been grabbed from the back. And I remember, I told a story in one of our post games for the members about the Cuban guy who grabbed me in the middle of a melee in Elian Gonzalez, and I was amused by it. I didn't care. A couple other guys here have been grabbed. And then I realized as I was reading Terry Crews thing, I remember someone once grabbed me from the front, but I cared so little about it that I don't even remember who it was. And I just thought it was kind of weird, but like he had done it jokingly or something. And I was like, well, that's super weird. And I moved on with my life. Mm-hmm. So I tell you that because I've got thick skin. And so if someone says, hey, Cenk, maybe let it go, I would take that as a private correspondence and his opinion that I should. And I wouldn't be intimidated by it. If I didn't want to let it go, I'd tell him to piss off, right? Because I have the benefit of having the privilege of being secure and confident and in a decent place in my life and my career where I could make those decisions. And I'm not intimidated by anybody. But I actually think that it, you know, and
well, that, I mean,
like saying that it's so, like moving on, I'm saying they should be left up to the victim. And Terry Crews doesn't want to move on, so there's nothing wrong with that at all. But if someone did want to move on, I also think there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, but it's not Russell Simmons' place to then come say, hey, give this guy a pass. Did he apologize? Ask that he be reinstated. You know, Terry Crews said that he felt the most emasculated in his life by the groping incident that Adam Bennett, by what happened and transpired by him and Adam Bennett, and Adam Bennett's subsequent response was just laughing in his face. I think that it was wildly inappropriate for Russell Simmons to insert himself into this, because how you feel when you have been groped is totally different, and you can't sort of project that onto how other people should feel.
That's actually Terry my Crews point. Felt. I just want to be clear about that. That's actually my point, which is that you have to remember that not everybody thinks like you do. Because just because I'm thick-skinned doesn't mean everybody else is thick-skinned.
And it's still a fireable offense. It's wildly awful, inappropriate behavior by Adam Bennett to someone that is at his agency at a party with his wife there. So he shouldn't be given a pass. That's bad. Don't do that. You struck out, Adam Bennett.
I was ragging my mind around this like sexual harassment thing. And the sexual harassment, I talked to someone in law enforcement, and they said that there's a lot that goes into it, of course. But one is their working relationship, and then where it happened, and then a bunch of other things. But the working relationship has the most effect on it. So in this situation, what was the working relationship between Terry Crews and Adam Bennett? Was it his agent?
Not his agent.
But so then it's just some guy at that point. And we're all loosely related in the production process, but it wasn't at a meeting. It wasn't in anything like that. I think the thought that I can't tell Terry Crews what to do or think. If it was me, I've been in situations where like I knew that someone was acting inappropriately, and I was like, I can handle this. It's not a big problem for me. My priority would be like, I want to help the discussion. The discussion would probably be in my opinion, would be best served by kind of a 10,000 foot view, since Terry Crews is so accomplished, unless this was a serial offender who has offended a lot of people. It would be nice to have the discussion. Definitely, if a name is dropped, it's the name of Adam Bennett, the person who did it. To bring Russell Simmons into it seems like a little outside. Another qualifying factor would be like, what's the relationship between Terry Crews and Russell Simmons? Yes. If they're really close friends and you've had a good relationship, and my friend sends me this email, especially with no punctuation, I would think it sounds like a friend's email, sort of, because there's no punctuation. But then with like this weird, like, I'm gonna gag with great love, all things are possible. Sign
I think
off.
He writes that all the time.
Right.
That's a sign off.
I will also say, but it's so connected. I don't know. That's one of those things where like, if I like Russell Simmons, you're right, with great love, all things are possible. But if someone's been pulling on, if you want to, destroy his sweater and you just pull the string as he walks away, like, then he is now an evil person and I hate him because he says things like, with great love, all things are possible. I found peace because I have two daughters now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah. Okay. So again, let's be clear here, and context matters.
Yes.
No one thinks that what Adam Bennett did to Terry Crews is okay. Nobody thinks that, right? So now, earlier I said I have thick skin. If somebody had done it to me, I don't encourage it and don't do that. And I might have a different opinion, later if it happened to me. But I'm saying that that's up to Terry Crews to decide, and he was not okay with it. So Adam Bennett should never have done that. That's obvious. That's clear. That part is easy. I think the harder part is the Russell Simmons part, where it's a private correspondence and Terry Crews is putting it out there. That's where context matters a lot. Because if Terry doesn't know Russell at all, and Russell's all of a sudden like, and Russell knows Adam Bennett, and they have business together, and he writes him like, hey, be cool. Well, that's a different thing, right? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if Russell Simmons and Terry Crews know each other well, and then if I know two guys and I step into the middle not having anything to do with work, right? And I'd be like, hey guys, you sure you can't work this out? All of a sudden I'm a bad guy and somebody's gonna send that email out. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right, but what I would say back is, then it sounds like he's just showing up and be like, hello, Russell Simmons is in the room and I produce a lot of stuff. And I'm saying, I ask a question, but regardless of the answer, I say, did he ever apologize? Then right into give the agent a pass, ask that he be reinstated. Like, if I care a lot, I don't know, I'm not Russell Simmons, obviously, I'm not Russell Simmons, but you know, like write more words, write a thoughtful email as opposed to like three things, one of which is a question you don't wait for the answer for. The next two are directives on how to give this, get this guy a pass.
Well, furthermore, I think why this sort of resonated with me is that, you know, Russell Simmons is incredibly powerful in so many industries. And I look at this as Terry Crews sort of speaking truth to power and calling this out, especially when we think about Russell Simmons' relationship to Brett Ratner, who had, you know, and his history of sexual abuse. I wonder how Russell Simmons has thought of those. Like, oh, give him a pass. Did he apologize? I understand why Terry Crews chose Russell Simmons to call out. Like, we cannot give sexual predators a pass. I understand that connection. And I think that, you know, Twitter is just is the forum that everyone, our world leaders, are using to announce policy. And if this is going to be the new policy in Hollywood, I understand why Terry Crews chose that platform.
I would also say that, like, this is the difficult discussion, what we're having now. I know for a fact that in the first 20 minutes of the show, I've said things that I won't stand by tomorrow. I mean, I'll stand by it because of where I was at the time. But this is all in the service of trying to wrap your head around. And I feel like that's where everybody is now. There's just so much noise and so many accusations. I saw a rundown of accusations and people who have suffered consequences and resigned. And I knew a bunch of them. Like, I've worked with a bunch of them. I'm like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. Yeah. And I'd never heard, some of them I'd heard rumors about, but others I hadn't. And that's what's so difficult. And I know that in the wake of this, there will be people who upon whom justice is meted out correctly. And I fear that in the wake of this, there will be people who suffer consequences that they do not deserve because for some reason, the court of public opinion just went off the rails on them. And that's what's so difficult. And I look at this with the Russell Simmons thing, and this might be one of them, but it also might be true. And we need to remember, we need to take into consideration every aspect of every implication that may have as we have this discussion and before we draw conclusions. And I think that's it.
Yeah, so last thing for me on this is that context matters. And so if Terry Crews thought that Russell Simmons is trying to intimidate him by sending this message, and so he wants to then make it public, I totally get it, and I understand. And I don't know their relationship. If he knows them and he's taking a private email and throwing him under the bus.
But so central to this is all these weird secretive discussions guys are having behind the scenes that are making things go away. And this is part of it. So maybe this is a learning moment to say, like, don't send an email to someone that could have an impact because this is a high profile person in a high profile case. I'm talking about Terry Crews here, who you're sending an email to. And so he might just say, I want to get it out. I want to get everything out there. So don't send something in that situation that you would be ashamed of leaking. But I totally get it. Like, you put me on blast. I thought we were friends.
Yeah, well, we have to go to a break, but I'm glad we're having these important discussions. I know it's difficult. I know they're lengthy, but I think it's so important to air them out. And I'll be interested to see what people have.
Yeah, and when we come back on the Glenn Thrush story, I think it gets even harder.
I know.
So buckle up and brace for impact. We'll be right back.
I'm not jealous. I just think it's interesting because I think Charlie might be a gay dog and I love him no matter what.
Have in common with your daughter?
I was going to say sex, but I can't relate that.
He said I had small hands. They're not small, are they? I never heard that one before.
Hey guys, welcome to TYT Sports. Ben Mankiewicz here, and we have a new guest introduced. Delighted to do this. Francis Maxwell is our World Cup expert. We're going to start here with Group A, which is Brazil, Croatia, Mexico.
Brazil or Croatia are going to win this group. Unless weather hit Croatia, then maybe Cameroon. Mexico has no chance.
You know who has no chance? The U.S. Literally no chance.
Well, not sure if you're trying to piss me off or something, but not cool.
What I told you about Mexico was a fact. What you were talking about U.S. was simply an opinion. USA has no chance. That's a fact.
Of course they don't. I might have been mistaken because in football, there's always a chance, even when there's no chance.
Like I said, what you gave was an opinion. What I gave you was a fact.
Calm the assholeness down. Like I said, in football, there are no facts about results. No one counted on Real when they blasted Bayern 5-0. No one counted when Brazil lost to Mexico in the Olympics. I was trying to be polite, but unfortunately, your bitchness got the better of you.
Just like I said, the U.S. has no chance.
Personally, I'm rooting for Germany. I just think maybe Brazil and Spain will fight.
Screw your BS. We all know it's Crimea for the win.
Faster than whoever. Well, and you can see it within the first 2 minutes. You're like, these guys are just, they're fast.
Absolutely, I agree. And they've always had that speed about them. They've always, it's always been about speed, but it's also been about.
All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, Brett, and Grace with you guys. Lono Netto writes in, you're right about ethics, Brett. We need sex ethics ed curriculum for schools, but we don't even teach sex ed yet.
Oh,
yeah, and the Squirrel Mafia, the well-known Squirrel Mafia, says, please put Grace the Bard Baldridge on more. The news may suck, but she makes the day better.
The Bard?
Sure.
Do you look like Shakespeare or something?
Yeah, well, a little bit, because I always say I look kind of like a lesbian Lord Farquaad with my haircut. So that's
really funny.
Probably it.
Okay, I'm not sure I should say that's really funny, but it is.
It is.
Okay.
It's my brand. Ted Cruz and Lord Farquaad had a lesbian daughter, and it's me, and you all know it's true.
No, I would not go that far. You're crazy. Okay, let's go forward.
All right. Keepin' moving. Vox has released a report about bad judgment and sexual misconduct allegations against New York Times correspondent, White House correspondent Glenn Thrush. This comes from Laura McGann, who is a former colleague at Politico with Glenn Thrush. There's a lot that goes into this report, but basically she calls into question his own advocacy for women, women in the field of journalism, saying that 5 years ago when Thrush and I were colleagues at Politico, he caught me off guard, put his hand on my thigh, and suddenly started kissing me. Thrush says he recalls the incident differently. She goes on to say, three young women I interviewed, including the young woman who met Thrush in June, described to me a range of similar experiences from unwanted groping and kissing to wet kisses out of nowhere to hazy sexual encounters that played out under the influence of alcohol. Each woman described feeling differently about these experiences. Scared, violated, ashamed, weirded out. I was and am angry. Thrush did release a statement to the piece. He said, I apologize to any woman who felt uncomfortable in my presence and for any situation where I behaved inappropriately. Any behavior that makes a woman feel disrespected or uncomfortable is unacceptable. In this interview, there are a lot of different examples, and there are screenshots of text messages sent back and forth, emails as well. 40 people were interviewed in and around the media. The author emphasizes his influence in the world of reporting and media. And then points out how some women had this tricky, confusing relationship with Thrush, where something that they didn't feel comfortable with had happened, and then they would sort of encourage him the next day or try and make him feel better. One of these women says, I hate feeling obligated to make him think I think everything is fine. It's been this thing hanging over me. I feel like I have to be nice to this person just because he knows people. They go on to just talk about just the toxic environment. Now, ending with the behavior attributed to Glenn in this Vox story is very concerning and not in keeping with the standards and values of the New York Times, said Eileen Murphy, the senior vice president of communications for the New York Times, in a written statement. We intend to fully investigate, and while we do, Glenn will be suspended. We support his decision to enter a substance abuse program. In the meantime, we will not be commenting further. So they close with a statement from the New York Times. This follows Glenn saying that he has been seeking alcohol treatment for his substance abuse problems. And that's sort of what we have right now. It is, again, a really detailed report. Please read the full thing. A lot of women are speaking on the record, although many anonymously. I want to get a response from you all on when you read this story.
Yeah. So, by the way, guys, whenever we talk about a story, the link will be in the description box if you're watching on YouTube, and we'll try to put it on Facebook in the comment section. So read the whole story for yourself, because that has a lot of context, and context matters a lot, as we've discussed in all of these issues. So it's easy to lump everybody into the same batch. I don't think they should be in the same batch. So Glenn Thrush is now facing this investigation about potentially sexual harassment. It is not the same as what Weinstein and Ratner and Ailes, et cetera, were alleged to have done. This is that doesn't mean that it's right. Those are separate conversations, okay? You know, one of the comments that George Bush said drove me crazy was he said back in the day, he said, I don't do nuance. I think it's a terrible thing not to do nuance. So nuance is important. But when you do nuance, it doesn't mean you're excusing the behavior of the people that did something not quite as atrocious as other people, okay? So now, in his case, what are the issues? Some of the women he worked with, including the person who wrote this piece, Laura McGann. So now, she did not report to him. He was not her boss. It gets complicated because now the rules are that you are allowed to have relationships at the office if they're not working directly for one another. So if they had a consensual relationship, there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. Now she says it was not consensual in that moment where he put his hand on her thigh and then kissed her without permission. Okay. So if that's the case, that's bad, and there has to be some consequences attached to that, right? I don't know what the consequences should be. I don't know. We're all trying to figure this out together, right? Now, I want to introduce another element here that we should think about, which is if he's trying to kiss women and they don't want to be kissed, I'm not sure that that's a federal offense in the beginning. If he persists, then it's definitely a problem. So where do you draw the line between? So here, I'll give you a personal example. When I was 17, I leaned into kiss this girl who we were studying together, and she turned her cheek. I hope that that's not a thing, right? Later, we went on a date for 4.5 years. By the way, just because later something else happened doesn't mean that the initial problem. But if we are going to say that every lean in for a kiss is wrong, we're going to have to round up a lot of people. On the other hand, if she clearly does not want it and you're touching her without her consent and sticking your tongue down her throat, that's a totally different issue. That's why context matters and nuance matters.
Right. A lot of these stories are essentially he got drunk at a thing and at the end wouldn't let a girl go home in the Uber, and then she wouldn't, like, kept trying to kiss her until she started crying and then was like, oh my God, I'm a terrible person, I need to leave. So it seems like he finally, when they start crying, realizes he does bad stuff, but he doesn't recognize leading up to it all the bad things. It also seems like he has a substance abuse problem. It seems to me, and this is just my sniff test, that he actually does have a substance abuse problem and that it's not just like an excuse for something. But that's not up for me. That's just like my opinion on reading this article. I just think that we do need to take a lot of things into consideration when looking at this. And I completely agree with if there's thing A and thing B, just because you call thing B worse doesn't mean you're calling thing A good.
Yes. And so, and in this case, about the girl who's crying, it's not McGann, it's a different story. And there are multiple stories here. And so if you want to criticize him for going too far, that is a perfectly legitimate criticism, and the New York Times has suspended him. Further context is, as Brett pointed out, when it got to a point where it was overwhelmingly clear that it was not consensual and it shouldn't have gotten to that point in the first place. He does then go say, I'm sorry, and runs away. Unlike the other cases where they like Weinstein saying, shut up and stand there and take it, basically, right? He did not do that stuff. So Grace, I want to come back to you, but we have to take a break, okay? We're gonna keep going on the internet. Sorry, radio audience, we love you guys. We'll see you tomorrow, but we're gonna keep on going on TYTnetwork.com. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, Brett, and Grace. Obviously, we were just talking about the Glenn Thrush story, and I wanted to get Grace's thoughts on it. So, Grace, what do you think?
So, I think for me, when I was reading through this Vox piece, ethics math aside, it was so familiar and unsettling to hear about how women were warning each other about how to behave around Glenn Thrush, and they were warning each other. That's something that is very familiar to girls. I mean, I remember this is down in college, there were certain boys that you just knew were too touchy-feely, especially when drinking. So you have this sort of circle of trust among friends, and I'm sure it exists within other circles as well, but I know that feeling, that sentiment. So reading through this, and the text messages that are included, the screenshots where this girl says, I'm nervous about this Glenn situation, and then her friends are saying, all right, call an Uber. And just people, you know, checking in on her because, again, they knew that he was this way, that he was irresponsible and did not conduct himself in a way that was respectful. And then juxtaposing that with how he says he feels he is towards women, which was when he was confronted with it, he says, I don't lure anybody ever. I got drunk because I got some shitty health news. I am acutely aware of the hurdles that women face in this business and have spent the better part of 20 years advocating for women journalists. And this comes on the heels of someone just sort of pointing himself, someone presenting the issue to him, saying like, hey, my friend had this incident with you last night. She left in tears. What can I do so that this doesn't happen again? And then he's just like, I'm acutely aware of women's issues. I don't know if you know, but I'm a dude. Right, like, I know.
Under it, I don't know. I watch a lot of movies. So it's like, I feel like when he says, you're looking for like this character thing. Like if he was a character in a movie, I would make him the one who, yes, he fights for women, but only the one who make him feel good about himself, make him feel like that big mentor that's given them a hope in the world. And I don't know what that is. And that's what's so, we talked about this on Pop Trigger. Like there's a lot of courts we can try people in. We can try them in the criminal court. We can try them in a civil court. We can try them in the court of public opinion, and I assume the basketball court, some kind of trial by combat, best first to nine wins and doesn't go to jail. But like, they all have their positives and negatives. Like when we think about Roy Moore, like the court of public opinion is much faster. Criminal court's gonna take a long time, and he might be well into the Senate before we do that. And there are a lot of people who, like he, you know, allegedly molested children. So and it seems like a court of public opinion thing. But criminal court is one where there are a lot of people saying what's admissible and what's not. So it's more curated in terms of what we put out there. But it takes forever. It's a real difficult decision. And then civil court, you can put it in. But you can have some kind of large settlement that part of it is, yes, it seems like justice was kind of done because someone who was victimized has the person who, you know, did that thing to them pay a lot of money. But part of that settlement is, I don't admit fault. And you can't talk about it. So what progress is being made? And it's a really difficult decision. And that's where it's hardest for me to do these kinds of stories because I don't know what to do.
So look, there's another angle in this story, which is that they say, well, he's powerful. And so him trying to make out with you is different and almost de facto intimidating. It depends. And if you say it's wrong for me to say it depends, that's fine. We're going to disagree on that. It depends. If he's their boss, yes, that is wrong. You can't have that, right? If he is unrelated to them, they don't even work in the same place. So as a powerful guy, somewhat powerful guy, come on. I mean, Glenn Thrush is not Harvey Weinstein. He is an okay reporter, a good reporter for the New York Times and Politico. He doesn't rule the world. He's not allowed to try to hook up with women? No, I don't agree. So That doesn't mean that what he did here was just trying to hook up with women. If he took it too far and he went past their obvious non-consent, that is a significant issue. And again, that's what the New York Times is looking into now. And if you say, no, Cenk, you're not allowed to do nuance, you should just blame him for everything and realize that he's absolutely guilty without context or nuance, I don't agree with you. I don't agree. So, and by the way, what Grace is saying is super legit. If there is, if women are talking about one particular guy and you got to watch out for him, that probably usually means something.
Well, the overwhelming thing that struck me about this piece was the 40 people that she interviewed, along with herself and her own experience with him, they all came to an agreement, even though they had different experiences, that were like, he's got a reputation for being a creep, especially when he drinks. And girls within the industry, women within the industry, because a lot of these were young, up and coming journalists. A lot of them are around, you know, in their early 20s, and he is older than that. A lot of them were just saying, we need to look out for each other. And now what we're seeing, because of this movement of women feeling emboldened to come forward, they're saying, you know what, we're not going to stick up for each other just behind closed doors in secrecy. We're going to say, this guy's a creep. We're going on record.
Right. And so we talked about it, I said it in the other one, where there might be some. One of my biggest fears is that someone will fall from grace who didn't deserve it. But I feel like moving forward, whereas previous to this, it seemed like the overarching fear was of powerless women who were afraid of the negative consequences that might come of telling a powerful person to stop and to stop doing this, or that they did this to me. Now the fear will be on the other side, or there will be a pressure anyways on people in power to, you know, be conscientious of other folks that they work with and what their power means. And that's the silver lining to this. It's a really difficult conversation, and I'll tell you what, I don't want to have it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to force myself to it, and I just want everyone to fall in line and have some very easy logical thing where everyone either tells the truth or everyone lies. All the men always lie, all the women tell the truth. And we come down to those like percentages where it's like 97-3. I want it to be 100-0. It's not. We have degrees of murder. There are degrees of sexual misconduct. Mm-hmm. I think that when it all comes down to it, it's not easy, but it's worth having. And I think looking forward is very helpful to find the silver lining in all of it.
Yeah.
All right. So finally, we move on to non-sexual harassment stories.
Yeah, and it's still going to be sad. It's going to be child death.
Thanks, Grace, for making this happen.
Yeah,
in the world.
You're welcome. A Canadian mother has been sentenced to 3 years in prison after her 7-year-old son died of strep throat because she didn't take him to the doctor. Tamara Lovett, 48 years old, of Calgary, was convicted in January of criminal negligence causing death of her son, Ryan Lovett, according to reports. Ryan suffered terribly from this inaction, Justice Christine Eidsvik said. He died an excruciating, unnecessary death. Ryan was bedridden at home for 10 days in March 2013. During that time, Lovett gave him dandelion tea and oil of oregano to treat his infection. Something that's sort of interesting about this case, just legally, is that the defense lawyer, Alan Heppner, who had argued the case should be dismissed because it took too long from the time Lovett was arrested until her conviction in January. The Supreme Court of Canada set out a 30-month time frame for superior court cases to go to trial in what has become known as the Jordan decision. The High Court, however, has allowed some flexibility for cases in which charges were laid before its order in July 2016. Lovett's case took 38 months to prosecute. That's sort of a footnote, because the core of the story is that this mother was not getting her son the treatment that he so desperately needed. And when you go into the details of what an untreated strep throat looks like, it's just so tragic. It's a tragic way for anyone to pass, but especially for a 7-year-old boy.
Okay, sorry. So I'm curious whether you guys think she should go to jail. So first, let me say that I got a 7-year-old son, and as I read about how he was dying, oh God, it is beyond heartbreaking. He had swollen lymph nodes, oozing ears, and jaundiced eyes at the time of his death, and the infection led to organ failure. Oh God, please, please get your kids actual medical treatment. If someone tells you, oh, you sprinkle fairy dust on it and you know, and whatever insane stuff. Oh, the shamans used to sprinkle oregano on it. I don't care what the shamans did. Get the kid to a hospital. So on the one hand, I am enraged that she did not get him to a hospital and the poor kid died. Crushing as I read the story. On the other hand, do we think she meant it? I mean, and the judge says that the mother is clearly incredibly remorseful and heartbroken over it. Her son died. I don't know. Can we say that that's punishment enough or no? I don't have the answer here. What do you guys think?
So negligence, right, is different. Right, there's an act and there's an intent, but if there's certain cases where you're, you know, negligent, and that carries with it some kind of negative consequence legally. I totally hear you on the, like, you know what we should do when my kid's sick? Take him to not a doctor. Like, that is what she said. You know, we should use the medicine that was available 1,000 years ago. If you did that with anything else, you'd sound crazy. Like, I need to be at the meeting, so I'm going to get there the way they did 1,000 years ago. It's in New York. I'll see you in 5 months. Like just.
Yeah. And, you know, this stuff like, oh, well, the cavemen ate dirt. Yes, they also died at the age of 13.
Yes.
Right? So don't listen to that horse crap. Believe in science and doctors.
But I think when you're sentencing the person and you look and you see that they're complete, you hear a statement of remorse, if she is wrecked, which she seems to be because her son died, nothing, sending her to prison doesn't bring her son back. I'm not an expert in sentencing, but 3 years is a long time to think about her son in prison. And I still think if she doesn't go to prison, she's gonna be thinking about her son for the rest of her life.
Yeah, and it also sort of brings up questions like, okay, is she liable to be a repeat offender? And I wonder, we don't have that information if there are other, you know, children or something like that. But then that also brings up the question, like, well, I would think she has obviously learned her lesson from this, that this wouldn't happen again. And the judge herself acknowledges that she believes that her remorse is genuine. It's a really complicated conversation about ethics, and like, do you put like 3 years behind bars? But then also, I mean, you do want the gravity of what took place, and the. But then, of course, it is. You see that I'm having these conversations in my head.
No, I get
you. You go back and forth. You want there to be a punishment because that boy was absolutely, you know, punished in his last 10 days of life. I mean, I can't think of, you know, a worse way to go. But then imagine the guilt that everyone believes is jail. Genuine.
Prison.
You say, yeah, you no, say prison.
Yeah, because it's such a selfish thing for her activity. Like, she was, like, holding true to these tenets, or maybe she just was like, you know what, I'm just going to read. And she watches her kids suffer to death. The things were happening up until his death, and she still was like, you know what, I'd rather use the oregano tea. And you're dealing with, when I say things like, well, if she shows remorse, it seems like she's being rational, but these things don't seem rational leading up to it.
I know, jaundiced eyes. I mean, it does bring up the question of, like, at what point do you just say, all right, this tea isn't working? You know, there's sort of a sense of.
But, you know, so yeah, look, she was horribly, horribly irresponsible. And she, her stupid theories, I get what you're saying about being selfish. My stupid theories are going to prove to be true, and I'm going to test it on my 7-year-old. I couldn't be more upset about the situation. And look, part of our job is to talk about these stories, and hence we in some ways judge them. And, you know, and I feel terrible about it, but this is the conversations that I hope helps get us to a better place so that someone watching this thinks, oh, if my kid's got jaundiced eyes, I need to get him to a doctor, right? So now, having said all that, I think where I come out on it, and of course we're not legal experts and you have to be in the actual courtroom to make this decision, etc. But from an outsider's perspective, I think I would have gone for a suspended sentence, a heavier sentence that is suspended. So she doesn't go to jail, but if she, I mean, if her kid, then, you know, any, I don't know if she's got other kids, but if they so much as sneeze and she doesn't take them to a doctor, then we're going to have a different conversation. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
I get it. Yeah. I feel like if you give her three years, I don't know. The judge is the one who sits there and, I mean, here anyway, sentences. So.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our last story, kind of medically related, because marijuana is, some people use it for medical reasons.
Sure. Oil of marijuana.
An elderly couple in Pennsylvania is suing police after they allege excessive force was used when their hibiscus plant was mistaken for a marijuana plant. Edward Kramer, 69, and his wife Audrey from Buffalo Township alleged they were handcuffed and forced to sit in a hot police car for hours last month after police arrived looking for drugs. The couple are suing the Buffalo Township Police and the Nationwide Insurance Company over the incident, claiming excessive force, false arrest, false imprisonment, invasion of privacy, and intentional infliction of emotional stress over the incident, according to the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. What happened was the insurance company came to photograph their property after a neighbor's tree had fallen onto their property. And while they were there, they took photos of this hibiscus plant. This is from Nationwide. And then they sent those photos to the police because the Nationwide insurance agent believed the plant to be marijuana, even though this plant had flowers on it. So if you know anything about weed, like, that's not a thing. Anyway, it's actually a pretty harrowing incident what they went through. Audrey Kramer was in her underwear at the time. She says she felt incredibly violated. She hasn't been sleeping since the incident. And then there's just a final quote from Mr. Kramer. He told his local news network, "Sometimes I think they look for crime where it doesn't exist in order to justify their existence."
Well,
I just thought that was kind of a real zinger from this guy.
I got news for you. They most certainly do. And it was actually in the beginning to lock up minorities and throughout.
And now it's to cut down on hibiscus.
Yes, well, everybody knows hibiscus is a gateway drug. Let's break this down. There's a couple of different angles here. One is how much I can't stand the Nationwide Insurance Company rep that went there and was like, I'm investigating a fallen tree, but I see something that might resemble marijuana. I will go to the trouble of reporting this to the police so that this 69-year-old can be arrested if they are actually having fun when they're 69. Why don't you fuck off already? Jesus, I mean, you're in their house. You're trying to do this.
They already had a tree fall on their property.
Yeah. And this nosy son of a bitch is in there with the eyes and hibiscus, or is it marijuana? Fuck off.
There was a recording and they were like, "Is that marijuana there? Let's call up the police now."
But you know what's also interesting about the Nationwide insurance agent is it really not thorough in their research. Because if it were me and I was even a little uncertain, like I think that's marijuana, I'm going to take some photos. Why not run it by a friend? Like everyone has a stoner friend or like someone that, or just,
no, this one,
oh,
has,
wait, just Google, oh my gosh, what am I thinking, just Google marijuana plant and then just cross reference that. Why wasn't there any cross
no because this person is looking for drama in their lives no matter how much pain it's gonna cost.
Right.
And they don't have any friends. You think that guy has friends? And I'm not putting it on the whole company, I'm putting it on that particular rep. Okay, all right, so now the second part of this is the elderly couple is absolutely right. It was a horribly dehumanizing thing. They wouldn't let her put the pants on, and they're handcuffed. They put her in a hot car for 20 minutes. Why? She's like really dangerous. What's she gonna do? Go plant some new plants? Like, if you don't handcuff her and stuff her in the police car?
And if she's high and she tries to run away, it'll just be like, all right.
Like, come on. I mean, because there's, unfortunately, with cops, and this is what we've been talking about on the show for a long time, it only goes to 11, right? It's not 0 through 10, and there is no 2, and there is no 8. It's just fucking 11 every time. Like, you grab these fucking granny and throw her in the police car. Where while we investigate your hibiscus? What if it was marijuana? What was she gonna do? Grip them all out and flush them down the toilet? Just calm down for a second and treat people as humans. And then, so, which then leads to poor Miss Kramer saying, quote, "I was not treated as though I was a human being." And I just want to tell you, that's exactly why the movement is called Black Lives Matter. By the way, I have no idea if they're white or black. I'm not saying that about them. I'm saying that black people in this country get this at an inordinate rate, an approvable, statistically higher rate. And that's why, just like Ms. Kramer, they say, can we also be treated as human beings? You know, our lives matter too. That's why we call it Black Lives Matter, because we'd like to be treated like we're human. So when we get this, you know, view into how other people are treated in the country, And it's this poor older couple, or it's the nurse. You remember the nurse who was like, the guy went into the hospital in Utah.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and arrested her. And she's like, "What? Yeah. I don't understand what's going on." And unfortunately, this is what a lot of people in the country, minorities, have to deal with day in, day out, this dehumanizing thing. So let this be a moment where we can go, oh yeah, we shouldn't treat our fellow citizens that way, no matter who they are.
Or what plants they have.
Yes, which leads to point number three. OxyContin. I feel bad, I didn't know this. There's a great New Yorker article that talks about this. It's legalized opium. It's twice the rate, oxycodone is twice the rate of morphine, okay? And used to be watered down in things like Percocet with Tylenol. OxyContin does not water it down. It amplifies it. Contin means continuous. It's short for continuous. We have legalized continuous opium use at high dosages. But the pharmaceutical companies make money off that, so it's okay. But Ms. Kramer had a hibiscus plant, and we had to go to 11, right? And just rip into the Kramers.
So sad.
This is the insanity of America.
And if I catch you with the geranium, I'll be back on Tuesday.
Is that geranium I see?
These people are mining geranium.
Oh, the geranium one?
The geranium one, that's it. That's okay. The joke. The geranium one scandal.
You guys are having a blast over there.
We got it. We found it. We found it. Geranium one is the scandal.
Next God, man, news. This country is so warped. It's so warped. Anyway, all right, guys, we got to go. We're way, way past time. We have a post game. Where we will discuss more sexual harassment. No, I'm kidding.
Fine with it.
So we will try to find a happy topic.
Yes,
we
please.
Will try really hard to find a happy topic. For the members, we will cheer you up. TYTnetwork.com/join. That's a heavy promise, but we'll try to live
up to it. Yeah, right?
Okay.
Our braids, bye.
All right. Bye-bye.